Welcome to What She Said, the heartbeat of Canadian women's voices, with me, your host, Candace Sampson. Here, we dive deep into the raw, unfiltered stories and triumphs of women from coast to coast. This isn't just a podcast, it's a movement where empowerment and education collide and where mansplaining is shown the door. We're here to celebrate, uplift, and echo you. So get cozy, tune in, and let's embark on this journey together, exploring the rich tapestry of women's lives, their battles, and victories, right here on What She Said. You don't have to love Taylor Swift or even football to love the love story we all got with the Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl win this week. Love, in all its many forms, is truly a many-splendored thing, and February delivers with more than just Valentine's Day. Personally, this month to me is all about Galentine's, which will probably surprise nobody who listens regularly. Today's show takes a look at love in its many forms intertwined with discussions on health and compassion in law. Here's what's lined up. Chantal Landreville, a Canadian author and certified love and relationship coach, joins me to discuss her new book, Raise Your Love Signal. Anne Brody is in with a selection of entertainment that's as thought-provoking as it is bold, featuring films that explore complex emotions and relationships from how to have sex to fitting in, and sometimes I think about dying. Intimate partner violence is epidemic in Canada, and sadly, it often comes disguised as love. Jaspreet Gill from the York Region Centre for Community Safety joins me to shed light on their innovative Valentine's Day campaign that aims to educate and empower individuals to recognize the signs of unhealthy relationships. Dr. Christine Pomme from Care to Know, an ongoing partner and sponsor here at What She Said, is here to offer her expertise on IBS, providing valuable insights into managing this prevalent condition. Parenting is an evolving journey, as we all know, and Allie Payne joins me to talk about breaking generational cycles so we can choose the parenting patterns we want to pass on and ditch the ones that neither serve us or our teens. Finally, I explore the concept of trauma-informed lawyering with Leanne Goldstein. Leanne is redefining her legal practice by prioritizing her clients' mental well-being, making the legal process more empathetic and supportive. So join me with an open heart and mind as we jump into these engaging conversations together. Valentine's Day is just around the corner and love is undoubtedly in the air. To celebrate the season of romance, I'm thrilled to welcome Chantal Landreville, a Canadian author and certified love and relationship coach, to What She Said. With the upcoming release of her debut book, Raise Your Love Signal, A Guide to Attracting and Keeping the Love of Your Life on Valentine's Day, Chantal is set to offer transformative insights for those navigating the complex world of love, whether they are single, dating, or in a relationship. So let's dive into a conversation about love, growth, and the journey to authentic relationships. Welcome to What She Said, Chantal.
Hi, so nice to be here. I'm very excited. Thank you.
I'm thrilled you're here. I would really love to hear a little bit about your really unique journey from the wine industry to be becoming a love and relationship expert.
That's a good question. And I think that when I think back or look back at the journey today, it only made sense. So I was in the wine industry for over 20 years. And one of the things that we do is you're always working with people. It's I was in sales. So the main key component of having the opportunity to develop relationships with people and breaking bread all the time as we're tasting wines, entertaining, I would always end up hearing incredible stories from people and becoming this natural therapist without even realizing it. Because I love to listen and I'm fascinated with just humans in general. So it's amazing to see when you take the time to listen and you're interested in people, people will literally vomit their lives to you. So this was kind of like a really natural thing that came to me. And I was on the sideline, always very fascinated with anything that had to do with self-development and growth. So I would attend and read and try anything that had to do with personal development, basically, and apply it to myself and to the people around me. So when COVID happened, I went from traveling every other week. I used to do export sales internationally, to being home all of a sudden. And I always knew I wanted to teach, but I couldn't quite figure out how I would make it come together. And when I met my amazing man, which took me 18 years to find through all my own personal struggles of being single and finding love, that's when the flash came to me saying, wow, thank God I actually learned everything I learned over the last 20 years of being single and working on myself. Because it's one thing to attract the right person. That in itself is a mission on its own. But making sure you are able to sustain and be in a healthy relationship is a whole other thing. And I realized we've never been taught anything about this. So that's when I was like, okay, I want to really teach people how to be in relationship, ideally before going into relationship, since the mission to actually get there is already a struggle in its own thing. So I created Raise Your Love Signal. I started doing some beta coaching groups, and everything kind of fell into place a little bit quicker than I had planned. And I finally made the leap and left the industry last May to focus on this 100% of the time, because I was so pulled. And this is when we always say people search for their calling or their purpose. Here it is. This is what I'm really happy to share with people.
And you know, you touched on something there that, you know, a lot of people really struggle to find love, especially later in life. Was there a pivotal moment or change in thinking that led you to find your true love?
Yes, I would say it was a series of events, including one that I finally realized why I kept attracting, because my pattern was always attracting non-emotional available men. And I couldn't quite figure out why. And when I dove deeper into the kind of work that I was doing, I did this specific kind of therapy. And that I understood, I lost my dad when I was 2 years old. So I finally put one and one together to say my subconscious mind registered that, you know, being in love with men represented them abandoning you, and or a form of rejection. So it was a way for me to protect myself, being in control and making sure that I would always attract emotionally unavailable men was a way for me to stay in control. And when I finally got the aha moment on that, then it was like, how can I start rewiring my brain of 38 years of age to change that? Because this is the thing, when we've been doing things for such a long time, and then you have the awareness of what identifying what the problem is, you don't change that overnight, because it's so wired in us. So I took, I would say, about 5 years to kind of like start to change how I went about things and change all of the habits that I had and thinking outside the box. And I would also say that I changed my views on what I thought was love. We are very programmed to think that love is Disneyfied rom-com. So we're looking a lot for those butterflies, that lust, that excitement. And I realized that that stuff hasn't worked for me. So I decided to try something new and really date outside of my comfort zone. And it made a huge difference. So I chose to grow into something very different than what I had been told to think what relationships and love were really. And that's kind of what I'm trying to teach people today. And I always say it's not very sexy, because when we think about love, we want it to be very sexy. But if you want to experience a healthy, long-term committed relationship, it's a little bit more than just that. So I would say, the combination of really getting to know who I am, doing the work, and the self-awareness part, getting clear on what I was actually looking for, because there's a big difference between what we think we want, what we attract, and what is actually right for us. So in my case, that triangle kept on like going triangle, because what I thought that I wanted wasn't what I actually needed, and it was definitely not what I was attracting. So having that understanding that tends to come with experience and some kind of work, that's where it actually opened my eyes. And I think that being in love or in the kind of relationship I am today later in life is actually a gift, because you know yourself so much better. You're typically more comfortable in your skin. You don't feel like you have anything to prove. And that's an error that I see a lot with my clients, is that they pretend to be people that they really aren't. And it comes chasing you after later in life.
Absolutely. And you talk a lot in the book too about sort of common misconceptions about love and relationships. Can you share a couple of those?
Yes. So as I mentioned a little bit, is that we are in love with the idea of being in love. And the love that we have been taught, which is very rom-com and Disney-fy, is not enough to sustain a long-term committed relationship. Now, when we meet people, we often get wrapped up in the lust, the excitement. We just want to close that deal down. We want things to happen as quickly. So we don't take the time to actually think, how am I going to grow and evolve with this person? I always say we often make it about the person, right? We always think of, oh, yes, I want him to be 6'4". I want her to be sexy and blonde. I want him to cook. I want her to be funny. I want him to dance. I want her to be financially off. But we don't think, how am I going to grow and evolve with someone? And some of those things, you need to give yourself, both people, time to build that trust, to build that safety, to build that getting to know each other, to know how you can grow and evolve. And I always ask my clients prompt questions like, how do you want someone to show up for you if you get sick or you do have financial issues? How do you want, what are the value system that you want to have if you're raising kids together? And this is something that I see so much with people. They end up having kids and they don't really have the conversation about, how do we see this going into the future? How do we want our kids to be raised? And it causes obviously a lot of conflicts. And needless to say, if you don't have a solid relationship from the start, bringing kids into that is just going to be a serious mess. So I would say that number one for me is really the idea of what we think love is all about, and the misconception that it should always be this rom-com butterflies. It's what about getting to know someone and allowing yourself also to give the time to open your heart. And people want everything yesterday. We live in a world where, you know, we're so used to having, immediate gratification.
On demand.
Yes, on yeah. demand. And I love to use myself as an example. I had a very protective heart. It was very difficult for me to be vulnerable. And this is something I had identified and started working on before I got into my relationship, so that when I would be in a relationship, it would be easier for me to navigate through that. But this didn't happen overnight in my own relationship. We've been 5 years now in, and I would say that I've experienced just in the last year a full open heart on what it is to really be and feel safe and not feel that I have to do everything on my own, because I was that high achieving, independent type A personality. And this is something that was built with time. So I think that the fact that everybody wants everything right away, you know, when you start dating, you're like, okay, what can I do to impress them? I'm going to, you know, wear the perfect outfits, get my hair done. And I think that as we get into the relationship, we get lazy and stop doing those things. And that's where they actually need to start happening more. What if we didn't give ourselves 100% at the beginning and slowly show who we are and do all these kinds of things as we are growing together, right?
Well, Valentine's Day is always a hard time, whether you're single or, you know, in a relationship struggling to keep the love alive. So where can people find your book, Chantel, or connect with you? Because I'm sure you're also sharing great advice on your social channels.
Yes. So they can find me on my website, which is www.raiseyourlovesignal.com. I am most active on Instagram, which is my name, Chantal.Landreville. I am throwing a, if you happen to be in the city of Toronto, a Valentine's Day party. Come and single, come and mingle, come mingle if you are single or even in a relationship, where we will be launching my official book, Raise Your Love Signal, a guide on how to attract and keep the love of your life.
Wonderful. Okay, I'm going to put all the links for that when this goes live on the blog post on the website after the podcast goes out. So thank you so much for joining me today, Chantal.
Thank you, Candace.
Hey there, it's Candace, and I've got a health tip that's too good to keep to myself. Ever heard of New Roots Herbal? Since 1985, this Canadian brand has been redefining what it means to be thorough. With an impressive team of scientists and over 8,000 square feet of advanced lab space, they test every ingredient 3 times to ensure you're getting the safest, most effective products on the market. So if you're like me and want the best for your health and for those you love, New Roots Herbal is the way to go. You can find their exceptional products exclusively at health food stores near you. Visit newrootsherbal.com to find a location in your area.
Have you ever thought, I'd love to have a podcast just like this one? Well, I can help. My name is Matt Kundle, and everyone at my company, the Sound Off Podcast Network, had a hand in making this show. Whether it was about the sound, the discoverability, or that you're just enjoying the show, we are all about the detail. If you think you have a podcast in you, reach out to me via email, matt@soundoff.network. Or check out the website and become one of the great podcasts we work with at soundoff.network.
It's another week of looking at new entertainment with Anne Brody, and there is a definite theme today. Lots of sex, Anne.
Well, you know, we like that.
but really sort of out there discussions about it, much more than I'm certainly used to from my generation. But I love it and I'm here for it.
Yeah, that's true. That is so true.
So let's talk about it. So how to have sex is the first one.
All right. Now, this is an English film and it's Molly Manning Walker. What a superb script and film it is. And when you begin to watch it, it's like, oh, whatever. These three young kids have gone on vacation from England down to Greece just to whoop it up and have fun. And, they're so superficial and they wear the clothes that their generation expects of them, i.e. skimpy, and they drink, and that's about it. Well, you know, we did that too, but there's sort of an extra kind of laissez-faire about it. Anyway, so one of the girls, the youngest and the most vulnerable, she's raped twice by one of the boys, and he is so nonchalant about it, and it's just, you can hardly believe it's happening until it happens. And she shuts down. She completely shuts down. And one of the other boys and her girlfriends realize that something happened to her, and they help and everything. But it's just this world that's created in which they're operating. That's sort of it's youthful and it's today, and it's shocking. It seems like not a lot is happening, but sort of like, as in a couple of the other films, everything is happening. It's just very subtly done. And these sequences look completely unrehearsed, as though these girls are actually living these things. That's why it's so clever and so wonderful and a great film for both kids these days and parents to watch.
Okay. The other one that has a heavy focus on sex is Fitting In.
Yes. Well, we meet a girl who has an unusual situation. She has no womb or vagina, and she's got to figure out what her options are in life. She doesn't have a period, of course, and her male doctor is, you know, he's kind of harsh with her, tells her to get real and face things, gives her exercises to do. Well, she's having this sort of really nice, close relationship with a guy I just love, Farrow Woonatai from Reservation Dogs. And she panics when the idea of sex comes up. And at a party one night, word slips out what is happening to her. So now she's under judgment by all her school friends. It's a very moving film. And you really, I don't know if I know anyone who's been in that position, but they deserve every bit of compassion and help and guidance that they can get. And it's a rallying cry for these kids. Now, interestingly enough, it was executive produced by Janelle Monáe, but it's a Canadian film. So it's really worth seeing.
All right. Excellent. And the other one that really caught me this week was Sometimes I Think About Dying with Daisy Ridley, which is a real shift from the Star Wars role she played.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yes. So she plays a woman in Seattle who has a really held in personality. And at work, she doesn't say anything and she tends to stare at the ceiling and out at the ships on the shore that are docked. And her office is very bustling. They know what she's like and they try to, no, they don't try. They accept her as one of them. And she has a date with one of them and then she says the wrong things and sort of goes back into her shell. And then she has sort of an awakening and she says to the guy, "Do you wish you unknew me?" And so from there, this awakening springs into her bringing donuts into the office, as simple as that. And then she has a dinner party and she begins to flower. And it's the most wonderful thing. And it just shows that we have to have compassion for others. And if we're like that, we have to have strength, or as she had, some sort of awakening to show us that life is for living and that we may be on a wrong path, but we can fix it. So there's so much in this and I love it. I love it.
We have time for one more actually. So can we just touch on Suncoast really quickly?
Yes. Laura Linney plays Bad Mother of the Year to this young Doris, Nico Parker. Now, she is completely overshadowed by her brother, who is nearing death's door. He's a young kid, and he's completely comatose. They take him to a care facility. Her mother abandons her at home because she's going to sleep next to her son every night. And she's so rotten to her daughter. So her daughter decides to act out, and she has parties at home, and her mother catches them coming in the door, and the kids are half naked because they're playing strip poker and drinking beer and smoking and smoking dope. And, you know, these things happen. So she freaks out. Now, meanwhile, the daughter has made friends with Woody Harrelson's character, who's out protesting the unplugging of a young woman in this same care facility. So he gives her some guidance, and eventually the mother begins to see the truth behind her behavior. And it's powerful. It's really powerful. Now that's on Disney Canada starting Feb 9. And it's a mixed bag of emotions. You're going to be up, you're going to be down, but that's life.
Absolutely. There's a lot of life in this week's entertainment. Yeah. Yeah. And of course, you've got more over on whatshesaidtalk.com, including a review of Hundreds of Beavers, which looks like the most bizarre movie. And so I encourage people to go over and read your review on it because it looks so weird, but funny. Anyway, Anne, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Candace.
Valentine's Day is a time we think of as synonymous with love and affection, but as we'll see in this interview, that's not always the case. Joining me is Jaspreet Gill from the York Region Center for Community Safety, here to discuss their innovative Valentine's Day campaign aimed at raising awareness about intimate partner violence and offering support to those in potentially dangerous relationships. Through a series of poignant Valentine's-themed poems, the campaign seeks to educate and empower individuals to recognize the signs of IPV and understand that not all love is safe. Welcome to What She Said, Jaspreet.
Hello, Candace. Thank you so much for this opportunity to chat.
Oh, I absolutely had to have you on when I was reading into this a little bit. So can you tell us more about the inspiration behind the Not All Love is Safe campaign and how it aims to address intimate partner violence through social media?
Absolutely. So what most people don't know, except those who work in the field, is how pervasive intimate partner violence is. So the reality is that 1 in 3 women will have experienced this, have experienced, or currently experiencing it. So that means every one of your listeners knows at least one person who has lived through this or will live through it. So knowing this reality, it was really important to me to take an opportunity like Valentine's Day, which is all about love and romance, which is beautiful and great. But what if that relationship that you're in is not a safe one? Because we can't understand, most women don't understand, don't know that there's a difference between love and love that's masquerading as power and control. So in these coming days, what we want to see is we want to take all that, the pink and red hearts that's meant to celebrate love. We want to take that and be able to shine a spotlight on IPV and let people know, let survivors know that if it's okay to question and think about the relationship that you're in.
I think, you know, a lot of people think of IPV and they think black eyes and being beaten up. And you mentioned something really different. It is about power and control that masquerades as love. And there's a lot of manipulation that can happen as well. So this campaign features a series of really powerful poems that sort of juxtapose those traditional Valentine's imagery and words we hear and see against the harsh realities of IPV. So how do you hope those poems will impact those who read them?
Oh, my first hope is that every survivor who encounters that little video gets that message that you are not alone. That's my goal for all survivors, because IPV, abusive individuals, their power and control is predicated on making sure that the woman, the survivor, feels isolated. She's disconnected from family and friends, made to feel alone. So they alienate her from all supports. So there is no one in her ear except that partner and everything he is telling her. So my hope is that they realize and they know they're not alone and they can see themselves in some way, because every survivor's story and experience is different, but that something in one of these poems can resonate and maybe they can reach out.
I'm really blown away by that stat of 1 in 3 women in Canada have experienced IPV. What are some of the common misconceptions or red flags that people should be aware of in their relationships?
Well, you're right. The 1 in 3 is astounding. It's crazy. And this is a global stat. So it's us in Canada, it's in the US, it's in England, Australia, like it's everywhere. I just want to say that intimate partner violence is the most hidden and unacknowledged form of violence there is. Why? Because it's perpetrated against women.
Absolutely.
So I'll pause there. And some of the things that you can look for, well, are you being shamed? Are you being demeaned in your relationship by your partner? You know, saying things to you like, you're stupid, you're a terrible mother. No one would hire you if you went out to try to get a job. Those things. Because no healthy, loving, safe relationship puts down the other partner in that way, shames them, humiliates them in that way. The other piece, is your partner the only person in your kind of social circle, your life? Where are your connections with family and friends? Has he somehow alienated you from them by telling you that they're against you, essentially manipulating your relationship with them by telling you a bunch of lies, which in those beginning days you believe? So that's the thing to remember with abusive individuals. They're, as you had said earlier, very manipulative, and they know how to present themselves in such a way that they can carry the woman away with these, you know, messages of love. Oh, I just want to be with you. Oh, don't go out with your girls tonight. I just can't bear to be without you. Just spend time with me. So in those early days, what seems like love, really crazy, infatuated love. Oh my God, he can't get enough of me. And we as women just kind of like take that in, lap it up. Well, really, it's setting the stage to isolate the woman, have her not dependent on anybody except him.
And I think, sorry, I just have to say too as well, I think it's important to point out here that, you know, some of these men are being instructed on how to do this with some of these, I'm putting in quotes here, influencers on the internet who actually give them a handbook on how to do this to women. It's horrifying.
You're right. And we can see this globally. It's not in any one part of the world. We can see a general rise in misogyny in every sector. Women in journalism, women in the sports sector, women in politics, women just in an everyday context, trying to carry through in their lives, experiencing violence. And it's not always physical. It can be emotional. It can be verbal, psychological. But all of those pieces wear a woman down. The whole point when it comes to power and control is to decimate a woman's self-confidence, her sense of self, so that she never leaves. You're not capable. If you question everything and you don't have that confidence and you live in such fear internally, of course you're not going to leave.
So this is happening in York Region. And so for women who come across this in your area, what resources and support do you offer to individuals affected by IPV?
Yeah, thank you for that question. We have a very unique service model. It's based on the Family Justice Centers in the U.S., and we are, in fact, the first international affiliate of the Family Justice Center Alliance. And so what our particular service model does is it provides a centralized intake for survivors. So they come to one location and they can access multiple services. So we bring together the justice and social services service providers all under one roof. So we take care of that. We will do the case management. You just let us know what your story is, what you're going through. We work with you to figure out what you need. And then with a survivor's consent, we connect her to those services because we're partnered with all of those services that provide needed supports to survivors.
How can members of the public engage with this campaign and help spread awareness about the issue of intimate partner violence?
Oh my God, come and like it, retweet it, repost it, ask us questions, inquire, have these conversations with your friends. Like, we need to be talking about this more openly. Like I said, this is one of the most hidden forms of violence. And the way it works, which is really frustrating to me, is that here is a man who perpetrates the abuse, but it's the woman who feels the shame. And that our society still feels that it's necessary to ask the question, well, why doesn't she just leave? Instead of asking, why does he abuse?
100%. We have a minute or two left. Do you want to read a couple of the poems?
Would you like to?
I would. Oh, okay. I would love to, if you don't mind.
No, I'd be honored. Please.
A little shove here and there, just a slap or two. It's him that is doing it, but he's blaming you. Do you want to read the next one?
I'm going to read one that we posted today. He's seeing red. Your bruises are blue. If you aren't allowed to leave, how safe are you?
So impactful. How long did you work on all of these poems?
Well, this was a collaboration with Tamara Cherry from Pickup Communications.
Love Tamara.
And she's absolutely brilliant. And we had some amazing sessions where we were talking about this issue, and she's very passionate about this issue as well. So I thank her for being the creative force behind bringing this campaign to life.
Well, I hope that this inspires people to go to your website, learn more, find your social channels, and obviously spread this wider than just York Region, because it is very powerful and very informative. So where can people go, Jaspreet, to find out more?
Please go ahead and visit our website at yrccs.ca. Certainly visit us on Instagram. Our handle is yrccsyr. We're also on X. You can find us. Just Google us. You'll find us.
All right. I'm going to put all of these links in the blog post that will go out following this going out on podcast. So thank you very much for joining me today. And I hope this campaign really gets to the people who needed to hear it the most.
I do too. Thank you so much, Candace.
CareToKnow.ca is a free resource where Canadians receive the latest health information, updates on new and existing treatments, and advice from Canadian doctors via email. After enrolling at CareToKnow.ca, you'll receive accurate and reliable information from trusted Canadian medical experts delivered directly to your inbox. Members can also access the website for information on a variety of health-related topics. Through resources like vodcasts, podcasts, and live webinars, Canadian experts discuss how to manage a number of medical conditions and provide the latest knowledge and advice to help you make informed decisions about your family's health with your own healthcare provider. To sign up and start learning more about the health matters that impact you most, enroll in CareToKnow.ca today.
Hello, I'm Wendy Mesley.
There you are. A lot of people have wondered what happened to you.
I could say the same about you, Maureen Holloway.
Well, here we are, a few years after we left our previous jobs. We've been busy.
We have a podcast. I know, you're thinking, who doesn't? But ours is really good. It's called Women of Ill Repute.
We don't just talk to women, though. Just the most interesting people you'd ever want to meet.
Artists, musicians, comedians, doctors.
Activists, convicts, writers, sex workers.
Drop some names.
Jan Arden, Pamela Anderson, Bruce Coburn.
Samantha Irby, Louise Penny, Marilyn Dennis, Colin Mochrie.
We laugh, we cry, sometimes we argue. Come and find us.
Our website is womenofillrepute.com.
Or try Apple, Spotify, and all the podcast places.
So now you know what happened to us, Women of Ill Repute.
Today we're diving into a topic that affects almost one in five Canadians, irritable bowel syndrome, or IBS. With Canada having one of the highest rates of IBS worldwide, it's a condition that deserves our attention. I'm joined by Dr. Christine Pommier, a renowned family doctor from Midtown Toronto, who is here on behalf of Care to Know to help us understand IBS. Welcome back, Dr. Pommier.
Thanks again, Candace. Happy to be here.
Can you start by explaining what irritable bowel syndrome is?
So we don't fully understand. What we know is that there's an imbalance in the gut-brain axis, meaning the biofeedback from your gut, something's happened. And there's a couple of supposed theories. We think it could be hormonal, stress. There could be an imbalance in the gut biome. I know probiotics. I speak ad nauseum of probiotics to my patients. Dietary factors, but really, it is a syndrome. And that's what I most emphasize to my patients. So some patients will experience constipation. Some patients will experience diarrhea. And sometimes the specific treatments differ at the tail end of a diagnosis. But really, holistically, you know, it's about understanding a patient's personal journey. The reality is IBS affects quality of life. People are upset. They're miserable. They're in pain. They feel out of control. They feel unwell. They don't want to go out. They don't want to socialize. There's body image problems, you know, fear of food that may trigger, not wanting to travel. The list goes on and on. So you can see how this syndrome also affects mental health, physical health. It really, really is complex.
And what are some of the common symptoms then of IBS, and how can individuals distinguish these symptoms from maybe other digestive conditions?
Quite hard. Usually it's by process of elimination, right? We rule out any other sinister things. So making sure your thyroid's functioning, in some cases, having a colonoscopy and abdominal ultrasound, because there's other mimickers. But usually at the end of the day, testing, you know, thankfully comes back normal, but unthankfully doesn't lead to a diagnosis. With IBS, the constipation subtype, people are more constipated, oftentimes going days without bowel movements, feeling bloated, gassy. There's a diarrhea subtype as well, that is quite the opposite, triggered by food and stress. And I think that, you know, part of the frustration from a patient is there's not one set of symptoms. Everybody's so different, which also makes it equally as frustrating for healthcare providers. So documenting your symptoms, being aware, you know, understanding regular bowel movements, having those in-depth discussions with your healthcare providers that are sometimes uncomfortable are absolutely necessary.
And 80% of IBS patients are women. That's astounding to me. So why is this so prevalent in women?
So number one, women access doctors a bit more readily. So I think that's probably a little overreported. However, there's a hormonal component too, which is, you know, different for females. Lifestyle, you know, there's mental health changes. I think truly that is, it is, I wouldn't say it's overreported in females. It is underreported in males. I don't think males show up at the doctors as readily as they should. Hopefully that will change. But we do think there is a hormonal component.
And there's obviously psychological aspects of this as well. It's not a pleasant condition. So what strategies can individuals employ to cope with the stress and anxiety that accompanies it?
So looking at diet, right? What are your triggers? In some cases, you know, food sensitivities can be analyzed. And while they're not necessarily validated 100%, I have several patients that know what they can eat, what they can't. Keeping up hydration is really important. You know, making sure that you're having a balanced diet. It sounds so basic, but going back to what your mama and papa said, I encourage probiotics, making sure that your gut biome is healthy. That's another topic for another day, but it's fascinating. Exercise is so important, you know, not just for mental health or cardiovascular health. It actually stimulates anti-inflammatory processes. It actually moves food through the gut. That can be really helpful. Managing stress too, you know, meditation, breathing. I certainly know that when I'm under stress, my gut goes wild. And I've identified that. And oftentimes I don't know I'm stressed until my gut goes wild and sort of, I think, oh, I forgot that self-care cue. And then of course, accessing your primary care provider, we have excellent medications available, particularly in the realm of IBS-C, so the constipation subtype. There's some really big game changers that have since emerged.
All right. And if people want to know more about IBS and how to manage it, we're going to avoid Dr. Google. And where's the best place to go?
Well, you can use Google. Just put in caretoknow.ca, a credible site. I am so excited about the expanding viewership of this site. It's medically approved. We have experts like myself that are providing input. It's evolving. Topics are changing. And the information is being updated according to updated guidelines. I know everybody's saying everything's changing every moment, but medicine is science and science evolves. So caretoknow.ca, it's free. Sign up, you get healthcare information emailed to you, and the site is full of many, many different topics that are pertinent to our listeners.
Yeah, with so much misinformation swirling around, it's important to go to credible sites. And you, of course, as usual, you've gone a little deeper into the subject for us, and people can find that on whatshesaidtalk.com. And you will be back next month because we're going to be discussing rosacea.
See you soon.
In this next segment, we're taking a look at a topic that is sure to resonate with many of us as parents, breaking generational cycles of parenting. It's about recognizing the patterns passed down through families and consciously choosing which ones to continue and which ones to leave behind. Joining me now is Allie Payne, our resident expert on the parent-teen relationship, who will share her insight on how we can forge new paths in parenting distinct from those we may have experienced growing up. Welcome back to the show, Allie.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a while, and I'm excited to get into this topic. So can you explain what generational cycles of parenting are and why it's important to be aware of them?
Yeah. So it's essentially how our brains are wired. So if you're listening to this because you're feeling frustrated and you're beating yourself up, I really want you to hear this. Your brain is wired to repeat what you know, and actually more specifically to repeat what you learned between the ages of 5 to 7, but at least before 8 years old. So a generational cycle is something where it can be very, very subtle and nuanced. It could be big and overt. They are patterns of both thinking, behavior, and therefore inclusive of feelings as well, reactions, responses that are woven into all of your relationships based on what you learned at home, what you learned in your familial environment, and are now showing up in your life in all of your relationships, but specifically we're talking about now that you're a parent parenting teens. Some of those you might be super proud of and love, and some of them might drive you crazy when you catch your mother's mouth falling out of your words and going, "Why did I say that?" And then you feel so frustrated because that was never what you wanted to do, or catching yourself doing a specific behavior that you don't want and don't like, but aren't sure why you keep doing it. It's because it's wired, hardwired in your unconscious brain, not your conscious. So it doesn't have to do with intelligence.
You know, you made me laugh when you said, you know, you hear your mother's words coming out of your mouth. You know, at my wedding, I remember saying in my speech to, you know, to my mother, I said, mirror, mirror on the wall, I am my mother after all, because nobody was more shocked to find out that you end up like your parents. So why does it feel so hard to break these cycles?
Because again, so this is, all of these nuances are what your brain has structured as normal. And that's a big word. It's a whole scaffolding and also really finely nuanced way of being human that is hardwired into your unconscious brain. Because as you're learning all of these normal things, your executive function when you're young is not young enough, is not developed enough to filter out what is what works for you and what doesn't for your specific values and beliefs, because those don't develop until you're well into your teens or as a young adult. And by that time, your brain, like a sponge, has already absorbed all these things. So part of the reason this feels really hard to change is because you make up a story that this is just about intention. I have good loving intentions. I have good loving intentions, and therefore I'm going to change. And to be fair, because your brain only knows this one construct, change to your brain means, well, I only know this thing. So you go to different, and different means a 180, because that's normal and natural when your brain doesn't have something else to hang on to. It goes, okay, well, not that. So I'm going to go all the way over here and do this. But you also know that doesn't work. And generally parents come to me because it's all full authoritarian and control, which would be normal to have grown up in. That was parenting of the day. So they don't want that. They want more relational respect, you know, not giving up authority or anything like that. But they don't want to, but they go all the way over to permissive parenting, being besties, because not because you're stupid, because your brain doesn't have something to anchor in on. So it goes different. Oh, that must be opposite. And that's where the problem ends up, is we do these back and forth and back and forth, trying to find what you wanted that is actually in the middle. And in the meantime, exhausting yourself, lowering your self-confidence, you feel defeated, hopeless, frustrated, and powerless to actually make the change that you have all these good intentions to do. But now you're running on willpower and fear, because no matter what you do to try and reach your teen, to support them in their struggles or teach them basic responsibility or just get them to care about anything, you're exhausted and nothing's really changing.
And your teens are probably confused too. So
very confused.
What are the first steps then a parent can take to start the process of changing or breaking free of these generational parenting hangups, I suppose?
Right. So the key to know is that good intention is not enough. And I don't mean that as a cut. Good intention will not create the impact you want, because your brain does not have miraculously the structure to just know what to do. So here's my 6-stage process that is a non-negotiable to actually creating tangible, lasting change without the whiplash effect where you have to keep going back. Okay. Number one, plunge. You must have daily immersion, 15 minutes a day. Okay. 15 minutes a day. That matches your specific learning style, audio, reading, video, within a proven system that is like a journey. It takes you through a process that aligns and builds over time. Okay. So like random content from books and social media and all of this stuff that it's just going to create confusion for you and your teen, because none of it, and some of it even counteracts itself. So that's confusing. Step number two is processing. You have to have a safe environment to ask questions with expert guidance, because you've got to be able to deepen your understanding, uncover all those old patterns, which we half the time don't know until they show up, and then shift belief to shift your perspective. And also writing, journaling is a huge part of that process, because otherwise you're just bouncing ideas around in your head and you're the only one there. And learning in isolation is not powerful. We know that. Then you need practice. You've got to have a safe and engaging place to consistently try new tools, to build your skills with consistency and confidence and guidance, because without that daily practice and accountability, your intention again, it's falling flat. And I know how desperately you want this, but like throwing stuff against the wall, it to see what sticks, it just confuses your team. You get less of what you want, and then you have no support to how to like adjust specifically to your situation and try again. So once you get plunge, processing, and practice down, then you go to the next three steps, which are also not negotiable, but are really linear. You must be able to change your awareness. And this takes time. It's moving from knowing different after the fact to thinking different in real time. And that takes consistency. It is not negotiable. It is like a bucket that must fill and overflow before you get to move to the next step. And parents stop there because they beat themselves up because they know different. So they just should have known better. And then they walk away thinking it must be them. Not true. That takes time. Then you got to move to action. Like now you're taking your awareness of when the opportunity is to change and you got to put it with what, like a proven tool. So you do different. And again, you've got to have those first three. You got to have support and it takes time. Now you've got awareness is full. Then your action bucket has to fill right up. But people quit here because parents say, well, no, I'm already thinking different and doing different. And my teen is still isn't responding. So this is stupid. And obviously doesn't work. And so you walk away. And this breaks my heart because good, incredible parents are wanting desperately to make this change, but they quit right before the last step, which is adapt. It's taken all of that until your teen actually adapts their emotions and behaviors to begin changing to your new approach that you've developed through all of these steps with consistency. So they trust it's not just a ruse to control or trap them. And you're still likely to stop there because you get a few quick wins and then think, great, I'm done. But you don't have what you need to continue to personalize tools for your situation because your team will continue to push because they will just want to find the weak spot. So that's my 6-step process that's absolutely not negotiable for breaking the cycle. To take your amazing intentions and get the impact where you're trying to skip from step 1 to step 6.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And it's important, I think, to remember too, you know, you're an adult going through this journey. Your child is, your teenager is not on this journey with you. They're still going through all of their things. And it is in their nature to rebel and to push back because they're growing and changing.
Yeah.
So they are going to change so many times over the years. And like you said, you have to adapt to what they're doing, not the other way around.
Right. So
I'm listening, Allie.
I really want parents to understand this is possible, but intention alone will not get you there.
Oh, I hear you. Listen, my kids are now past the teen years and anybody who is going through it, I feel for them so badly. Yes. So I want people to be able to connect with you because I know personally you helped me through some really, really hard times. And so I would like people to be able to connect with you. Where can they do that?
Best place is at Allie Payne on Instagram or TikTok. That's A-L-Y-P-A-I-N or my website, alliepayne.com.
All right, Allie, thank you so much for joining me today. It's always a delight. My cheeks hurt from smiling because I know that this works. I know it works. So I encourage people to connect with you. Thanks, Allie.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Steve Yerko.
And I'm Tara Sands. Now available from Maji Media is our new podcast, 4Kids Flashback. 4Kids is the company who brought you the English dub of Pokemon in the late 90s and so many other shows like Yu-Gi-Oh!, Shaman King, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Kirby, the infamous One Piece dub, and so many more.
We'll be talking to the people who worked at 4Kids. Actors, directors, writers, editors, producers, engineers, you get the point. And hopefully get the answers to questions both you and I have about the company.
I actually worked there as a voice actor on some of the shows.
And I was a kid watching the shows and remember way more than Tara does.
And thank God for that. Steve is actually a professional storyboard artist, which gives some really unique insights into anime and animation. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. That's the number 4 Kids Flashback.
Bye. Have you ever heard of trauma-informed lawyering? I had neither, so I wanted to know more about this compassionate approach to legal practice. In this next segment, I'm joined by Leanne Goldstein, a Canadian insurance and disability lawyer with over 20 years of experience. Leanne's not just any lawyer, though. She's a pioneer in integrating trauma awareness into her legal practice, ensuring her clients' mental well-being is at the forefront. She's here to enlighten us on how trauma-informed lawyering can transform the legal experience, make it more humane and empathetic. Welcome to the show, Leanne.
Thank you so much, Candace.
So for our listeners who may not be familiar, could you explain what trauma-informed lawyering is and how it differs from conventional legal practices?
So as lawyers, we are traditionally trained to approach legal issues and problems with an analytical mindset. We're taught to be cognitive, intellectual, objective, and to focus on predominantly the facts and not the emotions. Trauma-informed lawyering differs from this approach because it requires us to build a deeper connection with the client and a stronger relationship of trust. It involves exploring and validating the client's experiences, as well as recognizing the impact that trauma may have on their lives and how trauma can frame decision-making, memory, behavior, and emotional responses. So the trauma-informed model essentially involves a significant investment in the client's well-being during the lawyer-client interactions, as well as throughout the litigation journey.
In your practice, especially in regards to disability and insurance cases, how do you see trauma affecting your clients?
So the interesting thing about trauma is that a trauma response is a neurobiological response. So what that means is when a threat is identified, the amygdala, which is in the brain, prepares the body to respond to that threat and communicates with other areas of the brain, including the hypothalamus, which releases our stress hormones. The amygdala provides us with an emotional interpretation that directs the body on how to respond. And then we also have another part of our brain called the prefrontal cortex that assesses the source of the threat and then determines if the body needs to stay on high alert or if the brain needs to begin calming the body down. So for those individuals who are struggling with trauma or post-traumatic stress, the part of the brain that triggers a stress response may respond disproportionately to perceived dangers, and the part of the brain that's responsible for calming this reaction may not function as effectively. So what we see in our practice is that individuals who are dealing with trauma or who are struggling with trauma responses may manifest with changes in cognition, mood, they may have difficulty recalling things, they may have thought distortions, maybe dealing with anxiety and depression, rage, shame, emotional dysregulation, dissociation, and they may have an intense sense of distrust. And so they may be struggling with recent traumatic events relating to illnesses or injuries that they're consulting our office for, but they could also be struggling with complex layers of trauma that may precede the events that they're consulting us on or may be exacerbated by the events that they are consulting us on. And so the importance of understanding trauma and understanding the trauma response is it can impact how the clients interact with us as lawyers, as well as their experiences with the legal system. And we therefore have to govern ourselves accordingly in the trauma-informed model.
Aside from getting, you know, your law degree, it sounds like you have to do a lot of upgrading of skills as well to understand the psychology of trauma.
So it's interesting because a lot of people say, you know, do you have to have mental health education or experience? Do you have to be someone who is knowledgeable in the areas of psychology or trained in psychology? And the answer to that question is no. There's a lot of information that you can obtain either through reading articles and books, attending seminars, but also through the process of engaging with clients and learning to understand their inner worlds. That is a predominantly important feature of what we do, understanding the client's lived experience, understanding their inner world, and most importantly, understanding the trauma response, which can be something that you can learn directly from the client or from various informational sources.
Do you feel that trauma-informed lawyering is the way of the future then? Because this seems like a much more compassionate approach to the legal system for people.
We do. I think what is important when it comes to trauma-informed lawyering is really, from our perspective, there's really three main components to it. I like to focus on the components of education, emotional safety, and building trust and empowerment. And you mentioned a little bit earlier about how do you gain information. You don't need to be a mental health professional, but you can educate yourself on trauma and, you know, how trauma sufferers respond. But most importantly, in the world of trauma-informed lawyering, is creating a safe space. Trauma sufferers have often experienced a loss of a sense of safety and a loss of control in themselves and in their environment. They also often feel a loss of choice. And so they, you know, they might perceive the world as an inherently dangerous place. And so I think it's incumbent upon us to create a sense of security and safety where the client can feel connected to us in the process. So it might start with looking at our physical space. You know, how are our rooms designed? Are they intimidating? Are they warm and comforting? Who's present in a meeting? You know, it might extend to how do we conduct interviews with clients? What type of style of information gathering are we using? Are we, you know, using a style that resembles a court process where we're using sort of focused questions designed to elicit information? Or are we allowing a client to let their narrative unfold in accordance with their needs and convey the information to us at their own pace? So the important thing I think to acknowledge and understand when it comes to trauma-informed lawyering is that it is a way to facilitate an emotional journey for the client through the litigation process that is more positive. And so at the end of the process, they come out with a sense of validation of their experiences without judgment, without assumptions, and they have an emotional safety that is built for them, which can lead to a much more positive experience of the litigation process and litigation outcomes.
Well, I love this. I think it's fantastic. I hope people listening, in particular legal professionals, reach out to you to find out more. Where can people connect with you, Leanne?
So to connect with me, you can connect with me directly on LinkedIn. I do have a presence there and I do post quite frequently. I enjoy engaging with that community. Otherwise, you can contact me through my website, leannegoldsteinlaw.ca.
All right, wonderful. Thank you so much for joining me today, Leanne.
Thank you, Candace. It was lovely to be here.
If today's podcast resonated with you, spread the word and share the inspiration. Don't forget to hit subscribe on What She Said across your favorite podcast platforms. Crave more? Join my vibrant community by signing up for my newsletter at whatshesaidtalk.com. And let's get social on Facebook, Instagram, and X at What She Said Talk. Dive into my world a little deeper on TikTok and Threads at Candace Said. And for those who love the airwaves, catch me weekly on 105.9 The Region, Blast the Radio, and 107.7 Pulse FM. Until next time, keep making waves and remember, your voice matters.
Come on a journey like no other, where you will discover many roads that will lead you to a happier, healthier, and more stress-free life. And the beauty is, you don't need any vacation time for this adventure. The journey will come to you. Join Avery Rich on your very own journey into yoga. Along the way, she will demystify yoga poses and guide you into a yoga posture or short sequence, all in less than 15 minutes. You have nothing to lose but stress. The Journey into Yoga podcast. It's not for people who like yoga. It's for people who don't like yoga. Follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at averyrich.com.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know, and he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.